Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I'm passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And I believe one of the most powerful creative elements in the classroom is the human element. And that's why teachers are the key to making creativity thrive in classroom culture. What we do on this podcast is we explore ideas and resources, tips and tricks and blueprints and tools in order to boost creativity and innovation in the classroom. So today we're going to be looking at video games and what they can teach us about instructional design. And so if we think about designing those spaces of creativity and wonder, I actually think video games can teach us a lot about design. So we're going to take a dive into that right now. When I was a kid, I used to spend hours playing Tetris. I wasn't allowed to play shoot 'em up games, so that was kind of all that I could play. I would zone out everything else around me, and I would hit this state of hyper-focus, and I was fully engaged. I could spend hours playing Tetris. Now, over the years, the trending games have changed. I may or may not have created my own fair share of Sonic the Hedgehog fan art when I was in middle school, and I kind of got into Minecraft and Fortnite with my kids, more Minecraft. But it has me thinking about video games and wondering, what can we learn from video games? What can video game design teach us about instructional design? What lessons can we glean from video games as we think about student engagement? So here are my thoughts, that there are six different things that we can learn from video games. Number one, intrinsic motivation. Video games are engaging because they're fun, but so is learning. Learning is fun when students get to chase their curiosity or geek out on their favorite topics in a Genius Hour project. And learning is fun when they get to solve challenging problems or make sense out of the past or conduct their own experiments or get lost in a fictional world. Now, this can be challenging in a classroom where the systems are designed around extrinsic motivation. You have things like tight curriculum maps and PBIS behavioral systems and traditional grades, and all of these things tend to push compliance. In fact, Philip Schlechte, one of my favorite theorists on engagement, often described this state of strategic compliance where students, they weren't fully bought into it. Kids become adept at playing the game of school, and they lose the drive to learn for the sake of learning. But there are still things that we can keep in mind as we design lessons. What are ways we can tap into their interests rather than just trying to get the students interested in our topics and our materials and our favorite things? What are some questions that are naturally interesting to your class? What are some of the biggest themes and existential questions that get us to think about the things in life that really matter? How can we incorporate curiosity into the lessons? And how can we encourage students to ask their own questions? How can we empower them with voice and choice? And all of these are tricky. They're difficult. We have to teach to the standards. But there's actually if you look at this blog post that goes with this podcast, so spencerauthor.com/video-games, just type in, you know, video games and Spencer Author and Chancellor are, you'll find this. Actually have a grid that covers everything from inquiry-driven to interest-driven to product-driven. And then I have what types of standards might fit into that model of PBL, you know, and that pedagogical model. And so the idea is you often have a loose and a tight. And the tight is the part of the standard that there's no budging on it, right? Now, some standards are really tight on the concepts that you teach or the topics that you teach. You have to teach those topics. But other ones have a very, loose topic, and content, because they're really skill-based standards. They exist to have you teach specific skills to your students. And in those moments, there's a lot of leeway on topic. On the other hand, the ones that are concept-based standards often have a lot of leeway on the types of skills students do or the types of work that they're creating. And so the idea is that you find the wiggle room within your standard while you're still teaching to the standards. And I think, again, it ties into this idea from video games that it should be fun. It should be engaging. It should be naturally, intrinsically interesting. Number two, incremental success. Now, the best video games have these small successes that people go through. In some case, this might be, you know, levels that they have, like in Tetris, it's super slow at the beginning. In Mario, you're just, you know, knocking out a couple of turtles along the way. And by the way, I have a theory about Mario and turtles. This is my own fan theory about Super Mario. I personally think that Super Mario exists in the same world as Ninja Turtles. And so when they're attacking the Koopas that are these turtles walking around, he's actually attacking the Ninja Turtles. And that we really don't know in that alternative world if the Ninja Turtles or if Mario are the bad guys. So anyway, completely useless fan theory that I wasted your time on. But going back to this incremental success, the idea is that students should have incremental success in their learning. And I want to point out that even in creative games, there's incremental success. In fact, often those are even more natural. So, you know, we play Minecraft at our house. I was just building something with my daughter in Minecraft. We're building this zoo, and there's these new cool creatures that you can hatch. And we are having a blast. But she's getting incrementally better. There's little successes every time she creates something that's harder than the last thing that she created. So how do we create this sense of incremental success in classrooms? Well, there's a great Hidden Brain episode that demonstrates the counterintuitive reality that people are often more motivated right after a near success than they are after a huge failure or a big success. So the idea is that you want to allow them to succeed, but then you also want them to have some near misses. Too often as teachers, we prevent these close failures, which are actually vital to learning. In some cases, we provide too much scaffolding and we prevent these close failures from happening. And in some cases, we make it so hard that they just can't get it done. This is one of the things I love about flow theory. There's this idea that the challenge should meet the skill, that it should be so challenging that they can just barely do it or just barely not do it. Now, when kids play video games, they're given this kind of carte blanche of screwing up. They get to make as many mistakes as they want. And that's the critical part. If the near misses are happening in the classroom, they shouldn't be punished for it. When students realize that it's okay to make a mistake, that they can try again, they can improve, they can refine their work until it's as good as it needs to be, then they learn the valuable lesson that failure is permanent, but failing is temporary, that it's a part of the learning process. They start to develop a growth mindset, they develop grit. And the cool thing there is that it doesn't require a lot from teachers. It's just switching from the traditional style of grading to this standard-based grading or mastery-based grading, where they're given permission to essentially get a lower score, improve it, and then you base it on their current level of mastery. And I think where kids a lot of times get frustrated and give up is when they see their score and they realize that they've got a C and they've turned in too many assignments that are a C and they're just not learning it fast enough. And so they kind of give up. Whereas if they're at a C and they know that they're getting closer and they know that it's about their current level of mastery rather than their average grade overall, then it creates this sense of excitement. And You know, I would compare it to this. If you think about in sports, like let's say in baseball right now, there are teams that are essentially phoning it in, right? They're so bad. Not going to name any names, Orioles. And they're so bad that we know they're not going to make it. They start trading away players. They don't work as hard. They don't try as hard because there's no chance for them to make it. The idea here and the idea in video games is that there's always a chance, right? You're not getting an average grade. If you fail, you get this chance to come right back up and improve. And so again, I think that's where it comes down to a grading process. Now, I mentioned the flow theory piece a minute ago, and that leads to point number three, which is that you want to have a balance of challenge and skill. So in video games, the challenge level is just at the level or just a little bit above the level of what someone can accomplish. They're teetering on this. Is it too hard or is it just hard enough? And because they're teetering back and forth to it, they often hit this state of flow where they zone things out. They get lost in the moment. And it's some of the coolest moments in a classroom when that happens. I've seen it happen when kids are blogging or when they're filming documentaries. I've actually seen it happen when they're solving problems that are highly engaging in math. I've seen it happen during silent reading. So I know it happens in multiple subjects. And the idea is that the challenge level should match the skill level. Number four, embrace conflict. Video games begin with a conflict or a problem or a challenge. Now, some of these are more narrative driven and some of these are simply a nagging challenge that you might want to solve. Great conflicts can make us feel alive. They excite us. They ignite a passion in us. And when you focus on creating a problem or a conflict, you are able to create more suspense in your classroom. I used to think the best way to get full engagement was a faster classroom pace. I don't believe that anymore. I actually think that the goal is to slow down and have more suspense. It's why all the explosions of a Michael Bay movie pale in comparison to the suspenseful and somewhat slow pace of a Star Wars movie, right? Star Wars is suspenseful. Michael Bay movies are just explosive. And I think that happens a lot. I'm not saying that you slow down your classroom pace to the point that it's like watching The Crown. I'm just saying that maybe by having deeper conflict and better problems that kids are solving and giving them a little more time, you will actually have higher engagement. And again, this is a key thing in video games. Almost every video game has that nagging problem that you want to solve. It could be something as simple as knocking down the other side in Angry Birds, or it could be a full immersive multiplayer universe. Either way, there's an engaging problem. And again, if you want to look at an example of a horrible game, back in the 1980s, there was this E.T. game that had no conflict, and it just kind of went nowhere, and it was probably one of the worst games ever, and it's ultimately what sunk Atari. And I've had lessons that were like that, lessons that went nowhere. We were learning, but there was no problem. There was nothing to be solved. There was nothing interesting. There was no conflict. And I might have a bunch of activities, but they weren't really solving a deeper problem. And so students kind of checked out. Number six, incorporate instant feedback. Now, this doesn't mean that you as the teacher are always having to give instant feedback. The idea here is that students should be finding their own progress. They should be monitoring it as they go. And I've included in the blog post this metacognition cycle. And you might want to check it out. But it's the idea that students are looking at the task, they're evaluating their strengths and weaknesses, they're planning an approach, applying strategies, reflecting, and then moving back to assessing the task. So a little nuance here. I'm not advocating for straight up game-based learning or gamification. In many cases, video games are more programmed and passive, and I would rather, you know, see classrooms be creative and dynamic. I'd argue that many of the items on this list that I just mentioned occur when students are lost in a novel, or when they're creating and editing a video, or when they read a book. You could say that those last things that I mentioned fit other metaphors as well. But I do believe that video games can teach us about student engagement. And I think by looking at something outside of education, we're often inspired. Teaching is a messy, deeply relational endeavor that exists in this messy, broken world, one that is far less predictable than anything that you'll find on a screen, and especially in a video game. I get that. But I also want to point out that there are elements of game design that we might want to consider as we think about instructional design. Sometimes the best ideas come from unexpected places, and one of those unexpected places might just be the world of video games. So as you think through it this summer and you plan out some of those lesson plans for next year, you might want to incorporate some of these ideas from video game design, because ultimately I think it can teach us a lot about how to create lessons that are truly engaging and that inspire creative thinking. Hey, thank you for listening to the Creative Classroom Podcast. If you enjoy this podcast, would you do two different things? Number one, would you rate it on iTunes? That helps people find the podcast. And number two, would you tell someone about it and maybe invite them to check it out as well? So thanks for listening. Have a wonderful day, and go out and make something awesome.